going to start the recording now. And in Kim Michelle's absence, she did say that she was likely unavailable today. She asked that I run the meeting. If that's okay with the board, I don't know if any board member would like to run the meeting.
Todd just left the meeting.
Yeah, Todd just left the meeting.
Okay.
That's not a problem for me. If we can still go with two.
Looks like he's back.
Probably going to sign back in.
Okay. It does appear he's back. So we do have the quorum. I will call the meeting to order at 2:04. The board has the agenda and meeting location, obviously meeting location being Zoom. Are there any comments or changes to the agenda for today? Hearing none, if I can get a motion to approve the agenda and meeting location.
So moved.
Motion to approve. A second then?
Okay. Second.
Jackie's going to be logging in.
Okay, that's great. She can just join when she gets here. All in favor?
Okay.
Aye.
And any opposed? Hearing none. If I can also get a motion to excuse Kim Michelle Rivera. She did indicate that she was going to be out of Wi-Fi range today or internet range.
I motion.
I'll second it.
I just logged in. This is Jackie. So sorry for being late, but I'm here.
No problem. Thank you, Jackie. We have just approved the meeting agenda and we're considering a motion to excuse Kim Michelle's absence. So I've got a motion and I believe a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And any opposed? Thank you. We now have public comments. I don't believe we have any public present, but I will pause to allow any public comment at this time.
When will there be information for correcting the minutes from the last meeting?
We're going to consider that as the next agenda item.
Thank you.
And I don't see or hear any public comment. Next item is consider for approval the minutes of the regular meeting held June 29, 2023. Those are in your board packet. And Todd, it sounds like you have a correction.
I actually have a couple of corrections on director's item E. It just says that I voted to rescind the code of conduct. The information in there regarding the violation of a board member regarding two emails sent to a member of the community by the name of Mike Hammer, which is his email alias. His real name is Marion, but that's where that information should be, and it should not be confused with item F, in which requester Mike was not anywhere regarding the core information, which was that the records custodian was not timely presenting core requests. And then all those items also get summarized on other business item A. That's all I have.
Okay, and did the other board members understand those corrections?
I do not understand, but I don't understand it.
Okay, Todd, if it's okay with you, if I make those revisions, can we consider those revised minutes at the next meeting?
Yes.
Yeah, just so that we're all clear as to what the revisions are. And then once they've been corrected, we'll have the board look at the corrected version and then approve that or consider that. Okay. So I will yes, present revised minutes at the next meeting for the board's consideration. Uh, Moving on to next items, financial matters. We do have Dawn Schilling with us today, and I believe she's going to address the items under agenda item 5. Dawn, you are muted. There you are.
Okay. Hi, my name is Dawn Schilling, and I'm a co-owner of Schilling & Company, and I perform the District's 22 audit. And before I present the audited financials, we do need to hold a public hearing to amend the 22 budget. So I don't know how you want to handle that. We just need the budget hearing before you accept the audit. So I don't know if you want me to do the audit presentation, discuss why there needs to be budget amendments. And then we can open the public hearing, have that amendment, close it, and then the board can motion on the audit acceptance. Would that make sense, or?
Why don't we do that? What we'll do is we'll move agenda item 6 before agenda item 5, and agenda item 6 is the budget amendment.
Okay.
And so, Dawn, I think it makes sense if you can kind of explain the reason for the amendment and what the amendment is.
That's great.
The board can then conduct the public hearing, act on that, and we can come back to the audit.
That makes sense. Okay. Well, you have several documents that have been included in your board packet. The first one I'm going to discuss is it's a draft letter on our letterhead, and it's called a Board of Communications letter. It's communications from me as your auditor to the board of directors. And while you're pulling that out, I would like to say thanks to Nikki and Judy and Lisa for their assistance during the audit. As you know, this is the first year that I've audited the district. So there is a lot of documents that I requested to conduct that audit, and they were diligent in getting me everything I requested. I also had to reach out to former engineer Todd Johnson for some information, and he was very forthcoming in providing the information we needed. So that was great. It sounds like somebody's shuffling. Can you guys hear me okay? I don't know if we need to mute somebody.
Sorry, that was me. I mute.
Okay.
I'm printing okay. It before I leave the house.
No worries. So, as I mentioned, Board of Communications letter on our letterhead. And this is required communication. I did not encounter any difficulties in conducting the audit. As I mentioned, I did have to reach out to Todd Johnson to try to get some information on the assets, the capital assets that are on the district's books. And when we get to that part in the audit, I'll discuss more about that. But really no difficulties in performing the audit. Everything I requested was provided. And which is saying something when you're dealing with a change in accounting firms, that can be a challenge. And I know Judy and Nikki's office have worked hard to try to get me everything that I've requested. So that went well. On the second page of that letter, I do refer to corrected and uncorrected misstatements. And what that means is I had a few journal entries. So they were entries that I proposed and booked to the December 31st, 22 financials. And you'll find those on Exhibit 1, which is attached or following my letter. And really the first two, I proposed three entries. The first two adjustments were really dealing with the prior accountant. This is not anything that Judy and Nikki's office recorded. So those were two, the first one to adjust beginning fund balances to agree to the 21 audit. And then the second entry, when I got the records, the prior accountant had transferred some unspent bond proceeds out of the capital projects into the general fund. And, you know, those bond proceeds are restricted as to what you can spend those on. And so it was necessary instead to pull those out of the general fund and instead put them into the debt service fund. Really, bond proceeds should never go into your general fund unless your general fund has covered some expenses of capital. But that wasn't the case in this situation. And then the third entry that I proposed is to record the violation receivables. So during 2022, I believe Melissa's office would bill residents for violations and then send those reports from the billing system on a monthly basis to the accountant. At the end of the year, it was only $720. It's not significant in terms of for my purposes, but I thought for getting that on the books and then having Judy and Nikki record that updated receivable every month going forward, I thought it was important to go ahead and get that on the books. So not only the violation receivable will be recorded, but also the one-time fee that you have billed the homeowners in 2023, that will be put on the books and then reconciled each month as collections happen or whatnot. So you'll see that in your upcoming financials. And then I had one, what's called a past adjustment. So it was not significant. It's something I noted, and that's on exhibit 2. And that's really the payment of trustee fees to UMB Bank. There were some amounts that were out of period, meaning, you know, if you UMB bills you, they don't bill you on a calendar year. They bill you on, I don't know how they calculate their, maybe when your bonds were issued, but a portion of the bill that was paid should be related to 23, a portion which should have been related to 22. So again, that's a past adjustment. I didn't feel necessary to get that recorded. At the bottom of page 2, and I see Kim Nichelle is joining us here. I'll give her a minute here. At the bottom of page 2, there's a heading called General Fund Deficit Fund Balance. And this is a really important point, and we can discuss this more once we get into the financials. But at the end of 22, the general fund had a deficit fund balance of $59,182. So that means that fund has spent more than you collected in revenue. And this occurred also in 2021. I didn't look back to 2020, but you know, this started in 2021. It continued in 2022. And I know in 2023, it's still a significant issue. So I felt it was necessary to put this in the letter to the board that, you know, because you have the deficit, you're essentially using your debt service tax money to pay for operations. And on the top of page 3 in the second paragraph there, you know, that's not a good idea. And so I wanted to recommend, I know the board is aware of this issue, and you've taken steps, number one, by assessing the homeowners, the one-time fee in 2023 to help cover some of those costs. And that's about all you could do at this point. However, moving into your 2024 budget, and this is a discussion I'm sure Judy and Nikki will have with you, is that you're going to need to raise your property tax mill levy for operations, and then make sure you're coming up with a really good estimate of what your costs are. You know, part of the issue that happened to the district is when your 2022 budget was adopted, in 2021, so we're several years back now, you know, the accountant estimated expenditures at $117,000. You had $160,000 in actual expenditures, but the accountant only levied taxes sufficient to cover exactly what they estimated for expense. So in other words, they did not leave any cushion in case you had excess expenditures. And so that's part of what had caused this issue. This is a newer district, meaning the developer really, I think in 2021, was still funding and helping the district for operations. And in 2022, that funding went away. And the costs of running the district, you know, maintenance and things like that, was really not estimated accurately at that point in time. That combined with COVID and increasing prices, it was kind of a tornado of all converging at once on the district. And so I, you know, I just urge you to take care in your 2024 budget make sure you are levying, and I do believe increasing your mill levy for operations is the way to go. You can continue assessing, you know, the one-time fees to the homeowners, but you have cost related to collection, people that aren't paying. So it is much easier for collection percentages to increase your property taxes, let the county collect that for you. So you have very low cost of collection. It's included in most people's mortgage payments. And so they're paying a little bit each month and they're not having to fork up, you know, or come up with $500 all at once. So that would be my recommendation, is really focus on that property tax component and make sure you're covering your current year costs, plus you have some fund balance or equity left over as a cushion, because you have assets that you own, you're going to need to repair and maintain. And so going forward, it'll be, you know, it'll be a good exercise in reviewing your 2024 budget. So that's
basically— It was recently stated that we were at the max mill levy currently. Is that correct?
For debt service, you're levying—
No, for collection from Adams County. Is there a limit that we have to maintain?
Not that I'm aware of. There should be in your election question that's disclosed on page, I don't know, six, let me see, 18, page 19 of the audit. And I'll point this out when we get there. I realize you don't have this in front of you. The maximum would be $500,000 in a single year for operations with an unlimited rate. However, that is your election question. I would defer to Lisa to review your service plan and make sure that there's not an overall maximum. Some service plans say, okay, you can have a total of 60 mills between debt and general. I did not see a maximum in your IGA with the city of Thornton. So it would just be whether your service plan has that limitation. And I don't believe it does, but that is a good question to ask. Because you definitely, you know, can't levy more than what your service plan limits. But your election question allows an unlimited rate up to the $500,000 in that first year for operations. So if Lisa or Nikki or Judy want to make that note and get some research done on that before the budget hearing, that would be a good question to be able to answer. Any other questions on my written comment here in the letter? If not, there's one other, it's just a verbal comment, and we'll see this in the financials. You know, the district issued bonds and reimbursed the developer for the assets, the public infrastructure that was constructed. When I got the records of the district, those assets are just lumped in and it's the total of $4.3 million as construction in progress. We now know that those assets are completed and are in use. And so I recommended to Nikki and Judy that they break out your specific assets that the district owns out of that $4.3 million. So for example, I know there's playground equipment. I know there's a retaining wall that the district owns, irrigation, things like that. Those need to be componentized and depreciated. And then make sure that those assets are insured. When I took a look at I believe it was the 2023 property and liability pool insurance coverage, they usually have a property schedule that lists everything that the district is covering with insurance. And I didn't see a property tax, a property schedule attached to that. And so I believe Melissa's office handles that. I don't think Judy and Nikki handle that, but I just want to make sure there's a coordination to make sure the assets the district owns are insured by the property and liability pool. And so you're going through that process right now of that renewal. You know, that's something that between Melissa and Nikki and Judy can, and Lisa as well. Now the IGA with the city of Thornton says all of the assets except for park and rec are to be owned and conveyed to the city. There may be a portion of that $4.3 million that needs to be written off and conveyed, because I know there's water and storm drainage and a lot of components there. So part of those assets may be written off as conveyed to the city of Thornton. That's just a verbal comment going forward. So with that, let's get to the financial statements themselves. And so there's a cover page that's a draft of as of October 9th. And Judy did have a couple of corrections, reclassifications, moving things around, just a few of those. And I'll mention those as I go through. But let's start on Roman numeral page one, which is right behind the table of contents. This is titled the Independent Auditor's Report. I refer to it as an opinion, and we'll discuss some of the paragraphs here. The first paragraph outlines the scope of the district. We did, the scope of the audit. I did audit the district as of and for the year ended December 31st, 2022. Because it is my first year auditing the district, I am required to go back and essentially audit the beginning numbers for the year. So I looked at your cash and investment balances. I looked at your bond balances, accounts payable, things like that. So there was a lot more work involved with the first year audit than in subsequent audits. So I did go back and got those all tied out. I did not find any issues with that. The second paragraph is our opinion paragraph, and we are issuing what's called an unmodified or clean opinion. It's the best opinion that can be issued. So we do believe the financial statements that we're going to talk about here in a minute present fairly in all material respects the financial position of the district as of December 31st, 2022. The paragraph after that discusses the basis for our opinions. There are auditing standards generally accepted in the United States that we have to follow. One of those requirements is that we are independent. So I have no involvement in recording transactions for the district. I can make recommendations, but really it's up to your accountants and management company to handle and record accounting transactions. So I'm completely separate and independent of the district. That's one of the critical pieces of being an auditor. And there's a list of my other requirements on page two, but we'll get to that in a minute. Down below that responsibility of management for the financials, I actually prepared and drafted the financial statements and disclosures. Again, it's based on the numbers provided by Judy and Nikki's office, and the disclosures are based on the election questions, agreements, bond documents that have been provided to me. So even though I have prepared them, I ask you as a board and your management team to accept responsibility for these financials by signing what's called a management representation letter. And I request a board meeting, a board member to sign that with authorization from the full board. And so that'll probably be the board president, Kim Nichelle. And I also have Judy sign as your accountant. So it really is a dual responsibility there, since you as a board really rely on Judy and Nikki to prepare your accounting records. And so with that, Roman numeral page two is a page of my responsibilities as your auditors. As I mentioned, I need to be independent. Another item, we don't look at every single transaction. So what we're providing is reasonable assurance that your financial statements are correct. It's not absolute because looking at every single transaction would not be cost effective or fun for anybody. The bullet points here, we do exercise professional judgment and professional skepticism. I work with Judy and Nikki on some other audits, but I require backup and documentation for transactions. And so they're held to a high level for documentation. I also review the internal controls. How is the district processing its invoices, payments to vendors? How are you collecting your revenue? Things of that nature. And I did not note any issues in that regard. I look at your accounting policies, and all of these things kind of culminate into the paragraph right after the bullet points. I'm required to communicate any issues with those items to you in writing in the Board of Directors communications letter, which is that first letter that we discussed, where I talked about the general fund deficit. Below that, it talks about required supplemental information. And the first sentence, management has omitted the management's discussion and analysis that governmental accounting standards require. What a management's discussion and analysis is really it just a narrative overview of things that occurred during the year. It has not been included here. The first reason being it costs you more money. That's something that the district would have to repair. I would review. So for cost saving purposes, it has not been included. The state of Colorado has taken the position that if it's not included, they're going to accept the audit. So it does not change our opinion on the financials, but I know when some people say what has been omitted, they look at that negatively. A lot of districts of this size and nature don't include this MD&A. Now, when you get to the city of Thornton's financial statements, they have so much activity going on that a summarized narrative overview is really critical for anybody to figure out what the heck's going on. So for that size of entity, absolutely, it would be necessary. But for the district, it is not necessary. Any questions on that opinion? If not, we're going to flip into the financials. And so the first financials you get to, statement of net position, is on Arabic or regular page one. Statement of net position. This is another term for a balance sheet. It's a snapshot of the assets, liabilities, and equity of the district as of 12/31/22. And you'll notice it's a single column. This single column includes your general fund activities, debt service, capital, all of the capital assets of the district, all of the long-term debt of the district. And so when we see this condensed presentation, it's called a government-wide financial statement. And so total assets for the district, $5,119,000. Obviously, you see the big number there, the capital assets, $4.3 million. That is the component I was talking about that really needs to be broken out into individual assets and depreciated. So Nikki and Judy will be working on that. But if we move up towards the top, we see cash, deposits, and investments, and that's split between two components, one being unrestricted, which is held in your general fund. The other component, the larger component, is restricted. And the $377,000, those are cash and investments that are restricted and held in your debt service fund. So the property taxes you collect for debt service can only be used for debt service. So anytime you see restricted, that means it's related to debt service. As we move down the asset section, you'll see property taxes receivable, $334,595. That is what was levied in December of 2022 that you have now collected. You've probably already almost 100% collected in 2023. But that tells the reader that levy was assessed in 2022, and you're collecting that in revenue in 2023. Below that, under the liability section, we see accounts payable. So that's anything paid in 2023 to vendors that relate back to 22 services. So this is accrual basis of accounting. It's not cash basis like our tax returns are. It's accrual basis. And then we see non-current liabilities under that caption. Due within 1 year is $20,000. That is the principal payment on your bonds that is due December 1st of this year. And the remainder, $5 million, is made up of the principal on your 2020A bonds, 2019A and B bonds. And there's some accrued interest on those 2019B bonds. And then you have developer advances of $2 million, just over $2 million outstanding. And we have a footnote that breaks all of this down. So if you take assets less your liabilities, we get to net position or equity of the district. And you'll see restricted for emergencies, the $3,580. That's restricted for Tabor. That's just a mathematical equation. So that's a statutory restriction. We see restricted for debt service. Again, those funds can only be used for debt service. And then that leaves you with a deficit, a negative in your unrestricted. And your bonds were issued. And the reason is your bonds outstanding of plus developer advances outstanding are $5 million. And that paid for essentially your $4.3 million in capital assets. So the difference would be bond issuance costs that you had to pay to issue those bonds, your accrued interest on your 2019 B bonds. That interest is just accruing until you can collect enough taxes to pay down on those bonds. So once the bonds, you know, you get some good principal payments down, you're starting to pay interest on your B bonds, we'll see that deficit, that negative, correct itself. So it's nothing to be concerned at this point. When we get to the fund financials, where we'll see a general fund and debt service, the general fund deficit is really the one that you need to focus on. Any questions on that government-wide balance sheet? Page two is the reports the revenues and expenses, again, on a government-wide basis. I think it's more helpful to analyze each by fund. And so I'm not going to discuss anything on page two unless there are questions. But we get to page three. This is another balance sheet. It's called a balance sheet, but this is a fund financial statement. So we see the general debt service capital. This does not report your capital assets or your long-term debt. It's a different basis of accounting than what we talked about on page one. This is really how you budget. And this is the statements that, Judy's office provides you periodically when you meet. So general fund, total assets, $135,000. Debt service, as we move to the right, $642,000. Again, we see the components of those restricted cash and investments. We see the components of your property tax receivable. So on page one, your total was $334,000. We see that split, $101,000 in your general fund and $233,000 in your debt service fund. One thing to point out, again, it alluded to that, not alluded to it, we discussed it in my letter to the board. Under your liabilities for the general fund, you see $30,128 due to your debt service fund. So that is the amount the district has borrowed from the debt service fund taxes to pay operations. And that was as of 12/31 of 2022. So again, assets less liabilities gets us down to this fund balance. That's an equity term, fund balances. So here we see the $59,182 deficit in the general fund. And then we have the $409,161 in your debt service fund. Your debt service minimum fund balance is $250,000. You're required under your bonds to have $250,000 in reserve. So, and there is a surplus account as well that's making up that $409,000. So your debt service fund is healthy and is able to pay the obligations on your 2019A bonds that are required. Okay. Let's flip to page six, which is your general fund budget to actual, so revenues and expenditures. And here's where I want to talk about the reason for the budget amendment. So on page six, the first column there is the original budgeted amount. You'll see $110,000 in revenue was budgeted, $117,000 in expenditures. And we see that transfer in of $7,065, that's bond proceeds that was incorrectly transferred into the general fund. So that was what was originally adopted. What we're proposing is in the next column over, the final budgeted amounts. And then the third column are your actuals. So let's talk about actuals for a minute. Total revenue is $119,336. We see property taxes were collected, 100% collection on those. So specific ownership tax came in really close to what was budgeted. We see the landscape maintenance payment of $7,250. That was from the Cal Atlantic to help cover some maintenance issues that you were having. And so there was a settlement agreement with them. And so that payment was received. And then you earned some interest income. But it's the expenditure side that's giving you the issues. So actual expenditures were $159,822. And you'll see you originally budgeted $117,000. So, you know, $60,000 more than what you had budgeted. The primary line items, I'm not picking on anybody here, legal, landscape maintenance, you know, utilities were a little bit over, there were some election costs. So really a combination of overages really account for the differences there. So again, you know, I know you bid out your landscape maintenance, really look at the services provided. You know, there may be some costs or tasks that legal can shift to management, you know, all of those kind of things to really help kind of, you know, minimize your costs, your expenses as much as you can, you know, because you all live in the district and you don't want to pay more taxes than you have to. So it'll be, again, a good exercise to discuss when you're going through your 2024 budget. So
for clarity of terms, when you use the word management, are you talking advanced HOA?
I am not familiar with advanced HOA, so I am not sure if they are up to speed with the district management side of things, the statutory requirements. I know Judy and Nikki handle, for example, the minutes, the posting of the board meetings, things like that. They handle that for other districts in addition to their accounting function. But I'm just not familiar. You know, that's a discussion you'll have to have internally. You know, who is the best qualified or to take over some of those roles from legal? You know, other than your auditors, legal is probably the next highest hourly rate. And really, there's some things that, you know, that can probably be easily shifted. But again, that'll be a board decision and, you know, utilizing who you have to do that. I know Melissa and Advanced HOA is billing the one-time fee, so I think that's great. But you'll need to talk about nitty-gritty what Lisa feels can be transferred over or to other people. But there are definitely compliance issues. And so whoever those roles are, functions or components are transferred, need to make sure they know how to do that and are aware of what the requirements are. So that's my only caution there. So hopefully that answered your question, Todd. Any other questions there? Okay, page 7, and we'll get to the debt service budget to actual. It's actually after all of the footnotes. So page 7 starts the note financials. Note 1 gives an overview, purpose, location of the district, identifies that you're local government, so you follow governmental accounting standards, which are very unique. Again, you know, Nikki and Judy specialize in governmental accounting, so that's great. You've done a great job getting them on board. Note 2, summary of significant accounting policies. It talks about that government-wide financial versus fund financials and what the differences are between those. Again, you as a board, you know, other than the annual audit, you're not going to see the government-wide financials. You'll be focused on the fund financials. In the middle of page 8, we see the three funds that the district is currently using: general fund, debt service fund, and capital projects fund, accounted for all your bond and capital activity. With that transfer of the remaining funds in that fund to debt service, that fund is closed out, so you won't see that in 2023. In the financials. So that one will go away next year, which is great. Below that discusses local government budget law. And on the top of page 9, we disclose that the board or the district has approved supplemental appropriations. So assuming that you'll approve the budget amendments, this is the disclosure telling the reader that you did amend the budget. Below that, we see property tax calendar. On page 10 at the bottom, we see fund balances. Fund balances, again, that's on a fund financial, and it talks about the equity definition. So when I say restricted for emergencies, you can look at the restricted fund balance definition and see why that is restricted. On page 11, note 3, cash deposits and investments. There are a lot of required disclosures for cash and investments for governments. And so the first table here, we talked about unrestricted versus restricted. The second table here then breaks out your cash deposits investments between what's considered a deposit, so held in your checking account, so $25,319 at the end of the year. And then investments of $334,000. The majority of this investment balance is held by UMB Bank, and they have invested in Colo Trust. I believe at the end of the year, there was about $7,500 to $8,000 that the district was holding in its own Colo Trust account. So it looks like you are trying to maximize interest earnings. Colo Trust is paying about 5.5% now, maybe even a little bit more, which is great. Below that, we have discussion about custodial credit risk. So because you are a government, a local government in Colorado, you have FDIC coverage on your checking account funds. In addition to that, you have what's called Public Deposit Protection Act, which is an additional layer of insurance, if you will, for local governments in Colorado. Your $25,000 is well under the FDIC limit of $250, so no concerns there, but you do have dual coverage for your deposits. The bottom of page 11 starts the investment footnote. State statute outlines what you can invest in, and there's some bullet points on the top of page 12. And Colo Trust is considered that last bullet point there. It's a local government investment pool. And then in the middle of the page, there's a little bit of overview of Colo Trust. And it has three different portfolios. The district is invested in Colo Trust Plus at the end of the year. And then on page 13, there's a caption, restricted cash and investments, that tells the reader why your cash and investments are restricted in the amount of $377. And it's in connection with your bonds, 2019 A and B bonds outstanding. Page 14 is your capital asset. Footnote at the top of the page there, again, construction in progress, lump sum, $4.3 million. Again, that will be broken out in the 2023 audit. Below that, note 5 is your long-term obligation. So when we were talking about the debt of the district, this is the table that gives you some more information. We start as of this first column, December 31st of 2021. And as we move to the right, we see new issues, retirements, and then your balance at December 31st, 2022. So we have your 2019 A principal balance of your bonds outstanding. So you've made a $20,000 principal payment. Your bonds outstanding at the end of 22 was $2,385,000. Your B bonds are just below that. No principal payment is made on those B bonds. And just a reminder, I don't think any of you were probably around when those bonds were issued, but there's a required mill levy to pay your A bonds. Once your assessed valuation and you're collecting enough taxes to pay your A bonds, then payments on your B bonds can begin. And I'm not sure, I don't think you're quite there, or maybe you will be in 24. I'm not sure, Judy, I don't remember our conversation. But there's no requirement to pay on your B bonds until you have sufficient funds. That's how those bonds are designed. And so because you're not paying on your B bonds, we see unpaid accrued interest on your 2019 B bonds. So at the end of the year, $134,190 has accrued on those outstanding B bonds.
Are these actual bonds? Sorry, go ahead. Yeah,
yes, they are.
There is budgeted for 2023 to have some interest payments toward only paying down the accrued interest until we get enough money to pay all the accrued interest on the B bonds. Then we can start paying principal.
Right.
There is some money planned to be paid this year. And then the draft budget I have been working on, we'll be making more payments to the accrued interest for the B bonds.
Okay. Yeah. So what the district has to have your reserve met, which it has, your reserve fund met, and there's also a surplus fund that has to be met. So once that surplus fund is up to I think it's $240,000, then you can start paying on the Bs. So I can't verify that, Judy, because I don't have the numbers in front of me, but that is the process. Once the surplus is funded, then UMB will work with Judy and to come up with an estimated payment on those B bonds.
Is the builder's debt included in the B bonds, or where is that located?
The developer advances are separate. Underneath that, the direct borrowing developer advances, the 2.1 million are the outstanding advances to the developer. Well, let me clarify. The bonds were issued. Those proceeds were paid to the developer to pay for a portion of what they had constructed. What the bonds didn't cover were issued in what's listed here as developer advances. So it's an obligation to the developer to pay the 2.1 million. However, unless the district issues bonds to repay that, you have technically no obligation to repay. Those can sit on the books. There's no interest component, and it eventually expires. Because you will be focusing on paying off your bonds as required. So that's your developer advances are very subordinate to your two bond issuances. But nonetheless, it is outstanding. And so we report it here. And I wanted to see if that had an expiration date. I'm looking on page 16 as the advance. I don't see an expiration date disclosed, but we have, you know, I've been auditing for close to 30 years, and we've seen advances just sit on the books and remain unpaid, and the developers know that that's a risk they take when they're not repaid with bond proceeds initially, so. Did that answer your question, Todd?
Yes, it did fully.
Okay, thank you. Great. You're welcome. Below that table, there is a description of your 2019 A and B bonds. It talks about the rates. So your B bonds are bearing an interest rate of 7.75%. So that's what's accruing on that $398,000 in principal. There's opportunities to pay the bonds off early. You're not there quite yet with your assessed valuation. So that's something to monitor down the road. That note continues on to page 15. At the top of page, that first paragraph discusses the $250,000 you're required to maintain in the reserve fund, and you have met that requirement. Below that, it talks about the two paragraphs there. Right now, your bonds are limited, meaning you're levying the maximum allowed and you don't have to levy more than that, which is the 50 mils adjusted for changes in the assessed valuation calculation. So you're limiting, you know, you're levying the maximum that you're required to, and you pay what you can on the bonds. And at some point there's a trigger when those will change to unlimited tax, which means you will adjust your mill levy up and down, up or down, but you have to levy enough to pay, make the current debt service payments on those bonds. You're not there yet. There's a debt to assessed value ratio that you have to meet. Your surplus fund has to be maxed out, as does your reserve. So again, working with UMB as your paying agent will help you identify that trigger when it converts from limited to unlimited. Below that, we see a table here for long-term obligations. Because your B bonds really are just paid as cash flow is available, they're considered cash flow bonds. We've just disclosed what your required payments are on your 2019 A bonds. So you'll see, again, you have another $20,000 in principal coming up and $125,000 in interest. Split between June and December. And then for presentation purposes, we've listed the first 5 years individually and then in 5 year increments after that. So I know some people don't pick up on that and see the $797,000 in one line item. And that's really a five years worth of payments. So your payments generally increase slightly each year. From now until they mature in 2049. Okay, page 16 at the top is the reimbursement agreement with the developer, the 2.1 million that you have on the books. This is the agreement that governs that developer advance. In that agreement, there is no provision for interest, which I was shocked, which is great. Normally they carry a higher, 8%, 7 or 8% interest on developer advances. So I was surprised, and I did verify that with legal that I didn't miss something. Below that, note 6, agreements. This is your IGA with City of Thornton. It limits your debt that you can issue to $5 million in total. Talks about what assets you can own and what the city needs to own and operate. Talks about mill levies for debt, et cetera. Page 17, we get into fund equity discussions. And so note 7 discusses the equity in your fund financials. So we talked about the deficit fund balance, and I have disclosed that the district anticipates that taxes, your operate and operations fee will eliminate that deficit fund balance in future years, whether that be, over a 1 year period or 2 year period. We're required to disclose what action the board is taking to cover that deficit. Note 8 is net position, again, equity term, but this is discussing what we discussed on the government-wide financials. So we do see emergency reserves and debt service a little bit different than what we have disclosed in note 7 for the fund financials. Below that, risk, we're almost done, guys. I know this has been lengthy. Note 9, contingencies, we disclose the risk management footnote that you participate in the property and liability pool for insurance. Which is a great option for the district. You can get much lower premiums in that pool as opposed to buying commercial insurance. Note 10 is tax spending and debt limitation, and this has a lot of information here, but this is the Tabor footnote that governs local governments. The first 4 paragraphs are kind of standard language, talks about emergency reserves, but below that, we disclose the November 3rd, 2015 ballot questions that were passed. So anything to do with Tabor or mill levies, we've disclosed here. And that continues on to page 19. And so the mill levy question that we were talking about earlier, was there a limitation for operating mill levy? On page 19, that operations and mill levy ad valorem taxes, that's the election question I was referring to, that had without limitation of rate. So again, we'll have Lisa research in the service plan if there is a limitation, but I didn't see one, but that's a good question to ask. Okay.
Yeah, and I can interrupt real quickly. I did check the service plan while we've been on the meeting here, and there's not a limitation on the operations and maintenance.
Okay.
Only on debt service.
Perfect. Okay, thank you, Lisa. I like the double tasking. Page 20 is the budget to actual presentation for your debt service fund. This is another fund that needs to be amended. The 22 budget needs to be amended. Again, the original budget is in that first column. The proposed amended is in the second column, and then we have the actuals. And if you look at, we're within $1,000. Yeah, $503 is what you exceeded the budget. Nothing that it wasn't within your control. So your county treasurer's fees, you budgeted $3,549. Again, that was calculated by your prior accountants. The actual fees that was charged by the county, $3,561. The other component was your paying agent fees, budgeted $7,000. That actually came out $7,491. So really those two line items are what's put you over budget. So again, we'll have the public hearing and ask you to approve this final budgeted column. Page 21, Capital Projects Fund, budget to actual, no amendment needed here. It's just transferring out the remaining bond proceeds into the debt service fund, and that fund goes away. And then for informational purposes, page 22 is the summary of the assessed valuation of the district, the mill levies, and the property taxes. So, I always kind of like to see this in the financials. You can see how the growth of the district has happened. So your most recent, you probably have a more recent preliminary AV, But your December 23 number of $4,193,000 is what you received in December of last year. And you levied your mills on that to collect the $334,000 in taxes this year. I see at the top of that first row, 2017, far right column, I have an error in the formula, and that'll just be zero. So I will get that updated. And then the last page is just your debt to maturity by individual year on your 2019A bonds. So if you're still with me, are there any questions? I know it's a lot of information. So what we're asking, we'll actually have a motion to open the public hearing to amend the 22 budget, go through that process, and then we'll come back and have you approve the audited financials if you're so inclined. So Lisa, do you want to take over on the motions and the procedure for the public hearing?
Have to mute myself, sure. Okay. If we can, from the board, get a motion to open the public hearing.
I motion.
Okay, we've got Todd on the motion and Joanne on the second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, the public hearing is now open. Are there any public comments? And again, I believe we don't have any public present. If I can get a motion to close the public hearing.
I motion to close.
I'll second.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
I abstain. The information that I requested last week did not get to me until 3 hours prior to this meeting. I was not around for the board in 2022. I would like that to be on the notes in the minute meetings, please.
Okay. At this point, Todd, we are only closing the public hearing. Is it the motion to amend the budget that you want to abstain from?
Correct.
Okay. So we will now close the public hearing. And then for the board, we do have a proposal to amend the 2022 budget. Is there any discussion on that issue? Okay, if we can get a motion to amend the 2022 budget, and it would be consistent with the resolution in your board packets.
I motion.
And as motion. Thank you, Jackie. Jackie made the motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
I think it was Jolene.
Okay. Yeah. And all in favor?
Aye.
Okay. And any opposed or abstentions?
Aye.
Is that an abstention, Todd, or an opposed to the motion?
An abstention, strictly because I was not given the information that I requested a week ago until 3 hours prior to this meeting. I would like that recorded in the minute meetings, please.
Okay, and we will make note of that. So the motion does pass, the budget will be amended as recommended by the accountants and auditor.
And then to approve the audit, we're just asking for approval of the 22 audit as presented, with the few changes that Judy had pointed out to me, and authorize the board president to sign the representation letter on behalf of the district.
Can we get a motion to that effect?
I would motion to approve it.
I second.
Any apologize. I was thinking, was that Jackie?
Jackie, yeah.
Thank you. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
I abstain. Same reasons noted prior.
Okay. Thank you. We will make that notation. And any opposed?
Great. So I will route the representation letter to Judy's office and to Kim Nichelle via DocuSign to get that signed, and we'll get this filed. And this will, next year, if I'm re-engaged for the audit, we will be doing this earlier in the year and not in October. So we will get that done now that we've gotten through the first year. Moving forward, it will be timely. So thank you for allowing me to come and present the audit, and we'll get this wrapped up and filed.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is ratification of the Brighton Snow Removal Services Agreement. I believe this has been approved by polling of the board. If we can get a motion to ratify the Brightview contract.
I have some objections that need to be noted first, please.
Okay. Well, what's actually, if we can get a motion to approve it, then we'll have the discussion.
I would like to make my discussion, hopefully to change some board members' viewpoint on accepting this.
Okay, Todd, go ahead. Although I think we're considering ratification at this point.
Just as long as I'm on the record, there have not been three bids. There have not been three bids for this contract. This board has to be responsible financially for our development. Accepting a no bid contract is not the way to go. This individual company has had poor examples of maintaining the sidewalks during snowstorms. Multiple times I've had to shovel the snow, and once I even had to call the city of Thornton in order to get the information provided. Also, a $50 fee for a 50-pound bag of ice for the sidewalks, you can buy it for $25, and I don't even know if it's pet friendly. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. We will make a record of the statements. Is there any further discussion? Okay, if I can entertain a motion to ratify the Brightview contract. And specifically snow removal.
I would motion to ratify it.
I second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And anyone opposed?
Aye.
Okay, the contract has been ratified. Other business?
Yes, I have a direct question to the legal counsel.
Yes.
Am I legally required to follow the previously known email expectations moving forward as a VMD board member, in which I'm told I cannot talk to vendors, I cannot talk to citizens? These are violations of my civil rights, especially as an elected official. Lisa has not addressed this issue in 6 direct emails. I will not be threatened by Kim Nichelle legally because I talk to vendors or I talk to citizens. Am I legally required to follow that email?
You are required to follow the direction of the board?
No, I am not. I'm required to follow the United States Constitution. This board cannot limit my first right
on behalf of the board. Without the board's authority.
The board, I don't get my authority from the board. I get my authority from the United States Constitution. This document is violating my First Amendment rights as an individual, as well as an elected official. I will not put up to be threatened with legal action. Am I legally required to follow as outlined in the email? Yes or no?
You will need to consult with your own legal counsel.
I will not consult with my own legal counsel. This has been supposedly blessed by you. I want to know, am I legally required to follow?
To hear my answer. I just advised that your authority comes from the board.
And my authority comes from the United States Constitution and its amendments.
So if you want additional legal advice, you need to consult your own legal counsel. I am counsel to the district.
And you're violating my First Amendment rights.
I disagree with your assertion. I will
continue to talk to vendors. I will continue to talk to citizens. And I suggest you do not attempt any type of violation of my civil rights moving forward, to include threatening of such.
I motion to move on, please.
Okay. At this point, the final matter is adjournment of the meeting. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
I motion to adjourn. I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And any opposed? And we will be adjourned at 3:09. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Have a good day.